So I'm Natasha. I live in Castletown on the Isle of Man. And my daughter Madison is 7, and my son Isaac, who is 5, both have a condition called erythrotic protoporphyria. That basically means they're allergic to the sun.
Hi, I'm Kelly. I have a 6-year-old son, Gael, who was diagnosed with Fragile X syndrome 3 years ago. It's a rare genetic condition that causes intellectual disability and is a leading known cause of autism. I am from Douglas in the Isle of Man, but currently live in Boston. So I met Natasha last summer when I came back to the island to visit my family, and I heard her actually being interviewed on Women Today, and I heard that her children had a rare genetic condition, and so I went and sought her out at Tesco, and she was doing a fundraising and an awareness event.
Yeah, she stalked me. We've been talking ever since, so we've decided to join forces, and we want to set up a support group to help support other people living on the Isle of Man who have or have children with rare genetic illnesses, diseases, disorders,
whatever you want to call it. Yeah. It seems to be I kind of did a quick Google search, and it looks like maybe at least 12 other different rare genetic conditions. So at some point I would like to reach out to those families and help get the support group started. I guess what I notice most is that there is no registered charity here to support rare disease or people with rare genetic conditions or caregivers. In Boston, I have access to so many resources. I live on the same street as Boston Children's Hospital, which is one of the world's best pediatric hospitals in the world. So they also have a Fragile X clinic, and we can be seen there almost any time that we like by professionals who work in Fragile X. They understand it. So when my son is seen on an annual basis, he sees a geneticist, genetics counselor, developmental pediatrician. So we feel really lucky in that way. We also have access to loads of different advocacy groups who go to the state house and advocate for supports for, I'm going to say rare disease, because in the US that's the term that we use, but for rare disease patients.
I think like the biggest thing on the Isle of Man, I think there is a very large amount of rare diseases. Kelly's done some research, and there's so many different conditions. Obviously, you've got Fragile X, you've got erythrotic protoporphyria, or EPP for short. My friend's son has Dravet syndrome, which is a very rare type of epilepsy. So we're aware, just from people that we speak to, there's a lot of people with rare illnesses. As Kelly said, that there's no real support group for people who are dealing with those conditions. When your child gets diagnosed with a rare disease, you feel so alone and so isolated. You get a diagnosis, and then you get told, right, well, we'll refer you to someone, which could take 3-6 months. And in the meantime, you have day-to-day living to get on with. For ourselves, with Madison and Isaac, that's day-to-day living of avoiding the sun. Like, that's no easy feat. And then in terms of Kelly's situation, if she was waiting 6 months, that's day-to-day living with some really hard behavioural issues and other medical issues that if you went to a doctor and said, we've just got this diagnosis, I don't know if this affects that, they're not going to know. Like, no doctors on the Isle of Man have dealt with EPP. And I'm sure it's similar for all these other rare diseases, mm-hmm. that the doctors don't see it. So how can they answer your questions? And we know that we can't answer these questions for people, but from having to go through that process of figuring out who you can support, see to who can offer you financial support, medical support, like support at school, support with mm-hmm. just the wide range of everything, we can at least hope that we can pinpoint people and be a sounding board for people to talk about the issues that they face.
And there are also about 7,000 identified rare genetic conditions, which is astounding. Mm. And most GPs will not have studied many of those in any depth at all. So that's also another barrier to kind of figuring out what you might be facing. It also takes rare disease patients anywhere from 7 to 10 years to reach a point of diagnosis, and you may see up to 10 specialists before you reach that diagnosis. So I know in our case it took 3.5 years, and we saw probably 7 or 8 specialists. But we're in Boston, kind of in the hub of this medical activity, whereas here on the island, I don't know if my son would have been diagnosed if we were living here. And one of the reasons that my family's so committed to awareness is that since my son was diagnosed 3 years ago, there have been 5 other children in my family diagnosed with the same condition, and 12 carriers, all at risk of medical complications themselves, but also with the risk of having children with the condition. So it's actually been huge. It's had a huge impact on my family. It's a family diagnosis.
Outside of EPP, Madison is growing up to be the most stubborn, strong-headed, creative little girl. We bought a bigger house to kind of accommodate for the fact that they'd be spending a lot of time inside. And the garage is actually her craft den. My mum passes his desk and it's got all her craft bits, and she will literally take herself off into the garage and make a volcano. And my fridge is full of inventions and potions that she has made. And she's a very, very caring person. Like, she is very thoughtful for others. Isaac's never had a reaction to EPP. He is just a boy's boy. He loves superheroes. He loves playing computer games. He's a lot more outgoing than Madison is. She is quite anxious. She's quite an anxious child. But the two of them are just very happy, confident children, really. They don't really let it affect them. And I think we do our best to try and make it so EPP doesn't affect them, because a lot of people with EPP do end up feeling anxious and having mental disorders because they are isolated. At the moment, that doesn't seem to affect them, thankfully.
Gael is the happiest kid on the block. He always has been. He wakes up smiling every day. He goes to sleep smiling. He has frustrations during the day sometimes, but he's happy. He's known for his big smile. He's very friendly, very social. He's caring. He loves creatures and bugs and animals. He's just a really happy kid. He's fun to be with, and he has an ability to really connect with people, despite his quirks. It's so funny to watch him when he is watching like slapstick comedy. He's just got that deep belly laugh. Yeah. It's really cute. But yeah, he's very well loved by anybody who works with him, who comes into contact with him. He just has a special way with people. It's really nice.
I think being a mum of children with a rare illness is extremely lonely and isolating. You feel like you're hitting your head against a brick wall over and over and over again because people just don't get it. They don't get it. Mm-hmm. You go to school and say, this is what they need in place. And as much as they try, their hands are tied to themselves. There's financial restraints. There's time restraints. And when you've got a school of hundreds and hundreds of people, as much as you want to be able to help and adapt for every child, dealing with something like being allergic to the sun is such a life-altering thing that you can't expect everybody that comes into contact with them to alter their lives to. And you're asking, when they're at home, there's so many things that we have to put in place to make our children safe at home, and that's just within the four walls. I can't bring the kids inside and shut the doors and suddenly they're safe. Because they're not safe. So then you take that issue and you expect somebody else to be able to deal with it and want to deal with it and have the facilities to deal with it the way that you do. And it's just completely unrealistic. It gives you so much anxiety having children like this, because you have to trust somebody that isn't their mother or their father to to want to do the same things, and they're not normal children. Like, it's such a hard term saying normal to other people, because it's like people get offended from using them, that our children aren't normal, but they're not normal. They're not standard children. And I know, like with Kelly, you're taking your children out of your house and you're expecting other people to be aware and to be appreciative that your children aren't naughty children. Mm-hmm. Your children have their own issues.
Right.
We have people that look at our kids and they're walking around with umbrellas and they're covered from head to toe, and they get looked, and people say to us, oh, are you expecting this, the rain? And I get that the questions that kind of be asked, but we need to educate people. Mm-hmm. I've gone on a massive rant there.
That's okay. And I think the same thing, that there's so much awareness that we have to do as parents, within our own family, with our friends, at the school level, within the community. It's just kind of endless, right? So there are particular approaches that are really effective with kids with my son's condition. And so it's just constant advocacy. This is what works best for him. The other piece to it, which I think is, I guess it is frustrating, is that because it's a genetic cause of autism and he has an autism diagnosis, a lot of providers or educators think that they know how to deal with him because they know autism. And actually, there are different approaches that are more effective with Fragile X syndrome. And so, you know, it might be something very small, but it has a huge impact on him. So like you said, like, you put your trust in other people that they're going to adopt these suggestions that you've made, and it doesn't always carry over, and that's what's challenging. It's also exhausting. You know, I think in your case, because you have two children with the same condition, it's almost easier.
Yeah, that in a
weird way.
Totally agree. Like, if we had two children, one with a condition and one not, like when we got Isaac's diagnosis, I was like relieved in a sense that we had these children that were being treated the same. Not one is going to resent the other. One's not being restricted at doing things the other one can't do. Mm-hmm. They are being treated the same. They are the same with the same condition. That is normal life to us. Mm-hmm. They don't know any different. Whereas you're completely different.
Exactly. So it has a big impact on my four-year-old, because my older son needs so much support. And that's kind of how it is. And it's unfortunate. And I hope that when he grows up, he has an appreciation for differences and how to support people who learn differently and are differently abled. But right now it's really challenging.
Picking up on that. So I mentioned my friend, and they have this son with this condition, but they also have two older children, and your life is being controlled by doctor's appointments, mm-hmm. and hospital appointments and appointments with the school and appointments with everybody and phone calls. And my good, you would not understand, like, the amount of phone calls that we need to make. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just constant to try and get everything you need in place. And it's hard bringing children up while doing that, and to think that there's people out there like yourself and like my friends who they're trying to give their older children or their other children a normal life whilst trying to give this other child the support and the time that they need. Mm-hmm. And, you know, resentment is going to come into it, and you're going to have all these different issues as the children get older. I think the only thing you can look at, as you said, is that those children who haven't got this condition are going to look up as they get older and see the difference in people, and they're going to appreciate, mm-hmm. and be able to support other people who, right. do have different conditions, and not everybody, mm-hmm. has this normal life. Right. Like, to our children, like talking to you, Kelly, about your appointments, like, our children think going to the hospital is a day out. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. They spend all this time playing in waiting rooms, and then they get treats for being good afterwards, and that's a holiday to us, is going to London to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the challenge with rare disease awareness and kind of pitching ideas as a group is that each rare disease is so unique, and the management of each rare disease is so unique. You might be medically complex or, you know, whatever, and that's where the challenge comes in. But we are, I think, united in our uniqueness in a way, right? And so together we have a voice, and I think that kind of that's where I see this this going. You know, if just changing tracks, the other thing that I think is really important to share is that whilst Fragile X syndrome is rare because it's 1 in 4,000 males and 1 in 6,000 females that are impacted, female carriers are 1 in every 130 women to 1 in 250 women. It's really not very rare at all. So it can cause problems with fertility. It can cause problems with early menopause. And so it's actually quite common. And I think that women have never heard of it, but both my mom and my grandma had early menopause and they didn't know why. There was no explanation for it. So I kind of like to kind of mention that piece because I think it is important.
There's a lot of people, like me and Kelly and I have discussed, there's a lot of people on the island, there's a lot of autism, and I know that there is a lot of groups, and the island seem to be really good at their autism initiatives and awareness at the moment and putting things in place. But do they know the reasons behind the autism? And I think that's, like, as Kelly's pointed out, that it is a rare, Fragile X is rare, but it affects so many people and the carriers. And is there more Fragile X on the island and people aren't going to know? Like, all these cases of autism. Like, when Madison and Isaac, when Madison first got her diagnosis, they were like, oh, she's allergic to something, you've changed the washing up powder, or you've changed all this stuff. And if it wasn't for the fact that our GP sees somebody with EPP and wanted to rule it out, as Kelly says, if she was on the Isle of Man, would they have the diagnosis? If there wasn't something on the Isle of Man with EPP, I don't think we would have the diagnosis either. And I think, as you said, it takes so long, but I'm hopeful that people see our story with the EPP and think, whoa, hang on a minute, that's affecting me, let me go get that checked out. And I think Fragile X probably has got more people on the Isle of Man with it, but you need somebody to say, do you know about this condition? Like, have you looked into this?
Right. Yeah, based on statistics, there's definitely other people on the island that are either carriers or actually have full mutation Fragile X. So my son was 3 and was diagnosed with autism, and we were recommended to do genetic testing, but it wasn't a strong suggestion. It was just a list of 20 recommendations following an autism diagnosis. So we didn't do anything about it for 6 months. And finally, when we did, we found out he had tested positive for this rare condition that we'd never heard of, which was totally devastating. And so I don't know that people are always doing genetic testing when they receive an autism diagnosis for their children. And so that's also another piece, is to raise awareness that, you know, if it is Fragile X, there's actually lots of benefits to having that information. And I know there's an argument that, you know, it doesn't change anything, but I disagree. But based on personal experience, I think that it is worth knowing because of the family impact. Knowing that I have an 80% chance of having a child with Fragile X syndrome is huge, and is sheer luck that my second child is not impacted in any way.
Tell me a bit about what it's meant to the two of you to have this connection with each other. Talk about how your kind of friendship has developed since you've met each other.
Well, I think because I don't live here anymore, you're kind of like my eyes and ears on the ground as to how things are here, because I do feel like I could help in some way and make a difference, but it's hard to do it remotely. And so I kind of suggest something to Natasha. I pitch an idea or plant a seed and just see where it goes. Yeah. And so, and I think we're kind of the same, like the advocacy and the awareness raising is something that almost helps us to survive and to deal with it. And so I am naturally an introvert. I'm very shy. Yet I go to the State House and speak to state reps and congressmen, and I feel totally outside of my comfort zone, but I passionately believe that, like, I have to do that.
I think the one thing that we join on is we both have this real desire to raise awareness for our individual courses, because both of their conditions, our children's conditions, are genetic. So it doesn't just affect the children that we have. It is going to affect their children and their children and the wider family. So we see it upon ourselves as we can make a change and we can do something that's going to help our children in the future. Like if my kids go, when they've got their own children and they go to the doctors and they get this diagnosis for their children, that we will, hopefully Kelly and I will have put things in place and change things for a positive, so they're not in that position where they feel so alone. And I think that's another good thing with me and Kelly, that Kelly in Boston sees how things are done in Boston and she sees the support she gets and the different services and things available there. And then I kind of look at the Isle of Man and say, well, like, we don't have that, or how would that look over here and is that possible? And I think that's where we bounce off each other and we get our passion. So when Madison and Isaac got their diagnosis, I was on the internet trying to find out who else has this condition. It only affects 5,000 to 10,000 people in the world. So you're trying to find other people that might have this condition that you can say, right, well, how do I do this and how do I do that? And the British Porphyria Association gave me a list of all these things that they recommend that people have and do. And then I brought that over to the Isle of Man and it just didn't match, it just didn't work, and they didn't have the same departments. They'd be like, no, that's not us, that's not us, that's not us. And I think that's just coming from England, so I can only imagine coming from America, like even bigger differences that we need to kind of, we would like to be able to in the future to kind of go along and say, well, as a collective, this is the support we need for our children and rare diseases.
Right.
And this is what we would like to be put in place. We're well aware that we can't help medically every single person and show them exactly where to go and what to do when they have different conditions. But we would like to kind of put up a support group so we can talk to each other and help support each other.